Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Superman Sunday episode. It's also a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode. And today I'm going to be talking about another Superman holiday story. It's the Adventures of Superman at number 474. It's from 1991, Triangle number 2. And I think this is the first year of the Triangle numbers. I think they started in 91. So this is technically the second issue that ever had a triangle number. And for those that aren't familiar, the triangle era of Superman is when all his titles tied in together. So you would get a Superman story every week, and the continuity was tied in very, very tightly. So this is one of my favorite Superman covers of all time. And it seems like a strange choice. It's not him being super heroic. It's not, you know, him fighting a villain. And in fact, he's kind of not on the cover at all. But what you see is you see snow, you see trees, and you see a car that's smashed and wrecked. It's run into a tree, and we see somebody there who's behind the wheel and is kind of hanging out of the car. Clearly, they've been in an accident. There's a beer can and a beer bottle. It doesn't look good. And Superman is superimposed on the sky in the background. Among the stars, it's nighttime, and he's got his hand up to his forehead, and he's looking down, and you know, clearly disturbed by the scene that we see below the wrecked car and the person who looks badly injured. So it's a very powerful cover. It's by Dan Jurgens and Art Taber, and I don't know, for some reason I've just always really, really loved this cover. So the story starts, and we see that Superman is flying to Lowell County Hospital. It's New Year's Eve, and it's snowing, and he's thinking, for 10 years, significant questions have remained unanswered, questions of life and death. Tonight, as the spent year gives birth to a new one, these questions are going to be confronted and answered. So he lands, he changes into his civilian identity of Clark Kent, and he walks inside, and there's a couple of nurses there, and they're talking about how one of their husbands has to work because he's a policeman, and with all the drinking going on tonight, it's pretty much, everybody on deck. So Clark walks up, and he asks what room Scott Brubaker is in. And one of the nurses answers, well, let's see, special care unit, fourth floor, elevators are right over there. And the other much older nurse is bothered by the fact that Clark's even there. And she says, well, I'm surprised to see that young man here tonight. And the other woman recognized him as well. Oh, yeah, he's a big city reporter. You know, I've seen his picture in the paper for a syndicated column. Isn't he one of Smallville's like most respected graduates? And the older woman says, young Mr. Kent wasn't always peaches and cream. Trust me. He was one of the punks. She called him a punk. One of the punks involved with the tragedy that put Scott Brubaker here in the first place. And the girl says, oh, Brubaker? He's the one whose parents have decided to, oh, wow. So small town, you know, and obviously we don't know the whole story yet, but you know, people are judgmental, and I'm not saying that Clark doesn't necessarily deserve it. After you hear the story, but I think this woman, this older woman, is being a little harsh, being a little bit of a busybody, and doesn't know the whole story, honestly. So anyway, Clark heads up to the fourth floor, asks where Scott's room is, and he's directed by a nurse there, saying, I know visiting hours are over, but And Clark says, I'm a really good friend of his. And, you know, based on what is going to happen tonight, I'd like to see him. And they say, okay, well, you know, room down the hall. And, his family's there. And Clark says, okay, Scott and I go way back, and I'd actually like to see his parents as well. And he's thinking to himself, maybe I can get them to understand. And he thinks back to being in high school, playing football, and You know, he was a star running back. Remember, this is the John Byrne continuity where he didn't even know that he had powers until after high school. And so he was thought he was a very gifted athlete. His powers hadn't fully manifested. And during practice, he's making the whole defense look bad. And then Scott Brubaker tackles him, the last man between Clark and the goal line. And Brubaker says, you know, if I didn't know any better, Kent, I think you'd let me tackle you. And Clark says, I'll never tell, Brew. He goes, oh, man, thanks. If you'd gotten by me, then coach would have made the whole defense run wind sprint. So, you know, I really appreciate it. And so Clark is standing outside the hospital door, and he's thinking, God, I'd give everything to turn around and walk away, but I can't, not again, not anymore. And he opens the door, and the parents turn, you know, look over their shoulder from the chairs they're sitting in and say, I'm sorry, sir, you must have the wrong room. And the father, Scott's father, says, no, there's something familiar about this man. Have we met? And Clark says, Mr. and Mrs. Brubaker, I'm Clark Kent. And they're surprised, you know, they kind of pop up out of their chair. And then Clark Kent, weren't you there that night when he, like, oh man, he sure was. And look here, Mr. Kent, we don't mean to be rude, but we've got a really difficult night ahead of us, and really we'd rather deal with this privately. And Clark says, I understand. Please forgive my intrusion, but you know, I had to come. Your plans for tonight have been covered extensively in the press, and you know, I understand how painful it must be. And you know, the parents are very upset. Look here, Kent, we know you're a newspaper reporter, and if you came here for a story, that's just, you know, the most unethical thing. And you know, we see the stricken look on Clark's face. He says, no, my story is absolutely the last thing on my mind. I came here because Scott was a friend of mine, but it's deeper than that. You know, he's been in a coma all these years, and I haven't even seen Scott since that night. But you know, I've always felt a connection to him, and I think it's important for me to say goodbye before he dies. And Mr. Brubaker says, well, please understand, you know, we spent months trying to convince a judge that he was never going to wake up. He's always going to be like this. And, you know, this is just incredibly hard. And your presence here is not helping. And Clark says, you know, I didn't come here to hurt anyone, but I know you're surprised by me being here because, you know, Scott and I weren't really close, but there was a connection. And he goes back and he's describing that day where he let Brubaker tackle him, and how later in the afternoon when Pete Ross and Clark were having a walk home from school, 3 miles, Scott Brubaker pulled up in his car, you know, a nice fastback Mustang, and offered them a ride. And Clark's like, oh, you know, thanks a lot. You know, I thought townies were too good to hang out with us farm boys. And Brubaker says, hey, man, you made me look good today, and I just want to return the favor. And so, you know, there is a connection there. And, you know, Clark's telling the parents, back then there was, you know, hardly any socializing between town kids and farm kids. And I think Scott and I were on our way to overcoming that and becoming friends. And then, you know, the incident. And Scott's mother says, well, that's how you and Lana and Pete came to be at our house that night. And his father says, that night incident, God, look at us, like Scott's about to die here, and we're still afraid to talk about what happened. And at the same time, we're unable to stop talking about it, you know, because obviously they're about to pull the plug here in life support for their son. And Mrs. Brubaker agrees with her husband. She says, Charles, it's probably because we want to go back and change that night. You know, we would do anything to. And Clark agrees. He said, yeah, I know I would, anything to have prevented this. And Mr. Brubaker says, yeah, well, you think we haven't tortured ourselves with the same thought? You know, we went out to celebrate that night too, and we don't have any idea that Scott was throwing a big party. And Clark says, yeah, and probably no idea what kind of party it would be either. And Mrs. Brubaker says, you know, certainly not. You know, even though Scott was of legal age, we never allowed him to drink alcohol. And you got to remember, this is many years in the past, and it's Kansas, so you know, not an urban area. So back then, the drinking age was in Kansas was only 18. And then they're all high school seniors, so they're all old enough to drink. Scott's old enough to drink. Lana, Pete, Clark, they all are. And, you know, Clark says, Well, there was plenty to drink at the party that night. And with all those kids there, it made for a very volatile combination. And he's thinking back as he looks out the hospital window, saying it's kind of fitting that tonight's weather is sort of exactly like the weather that night. You know, a lot of snow, the roads are icy and slick, and we see the scene change back to that night, and Pete and Lana and Clark are showing up to the party, and they're just happy to be invited, right? Because you know, like Clark was saying, that socialization didn't happen really. They didn't really mix. The town kids and the farm kids, they didn't really mix. And Lana and Clark are worried that there's going to be a lot of drinking, and you know, they agree to keep an eye on Pete because Pete is so desperate to fit in. He wants to be popular so bad. They're worried that he's going to you know, do anything that people want him to do. He's going to give in to the peer pressure. So they walk in, and sure enough, there's kegs and there's booze everywhere. And some of the partygoers are kind of making fun, saying, I didn't know that Scott was having a prayer meeting tonight. Look at these, you know, goody goodies. They don't drink. They don't come to the parties. They're too good for us. And right away, Pete's offered a beer and takes it. Hey, I'm kind of thirsty. And Clark and Lana kind of decline. And some of the other kids, yeah, why are you being rude? Are you too good to party with us? And Scott Rupert says, yeah, Kent, come on. You going to seminary or something? And even Pete, he's like, Clark, don't blow this for us, right? It's not like this, what we're doing is wrong or illegal. We're old enough to drink. We want these guys to think we're a bunch of nerds. I mean, the whole town is going to figure us for being, you know, weak little sisters. We don't be such a straight arrow, like join the crowd, join the fun. And Clark says, okay, what the heck? Why not? Might as well start the new year with a bang. And Atlanta's like, Clark, well, Clark's doing it. And Pete's doing it. So we turn the page and we see that they've all had a little bit to drink, and Pete's passed out in a chair, and Clark's saying, wow, look at the time. We've been here over 3 hours, and Pa's going to be mad. I was supposed to be home an hour ago. And he still seems sober. He's not slurring his words the way Lana is, like, oh man, you know, Kyle's passed out. Kyle being the guy that gave him a ride there, and you know, they kind of rouse Pete, and he's like, Clark says, Pete, we got to get out of here. We got to find a way home. We're going to be in big trouble. And Pete's like, man, I might already be in trouble. I'm not feeling so hot. And Lana says, oh yeah, you are looking kind of green, Petey. You know what? I think we're drunk. And Clark's like, really? Cause I don't really feel anything. It's like, I've been drinking soda or milk. And so Scott's like, well, word is you guys need a ride home. So, you know, I can take you home, or, you know, could be Trouble City. And so they walk out to Scott's car, and Clark's like, you know, you guys have all had quite a bit. Maybe I should drive. And Scott's not having that, like, no way, Jose, nobody drives my car but me. And so they all pile in, and Clark again trying to convince Scott, hey Scott, you know, you seem kind of out of it. I like, maybe you should let me drive. You sure you're okay? And Scott says, I'm fine. Don't be such a worrywart. You know, besides, I saw you drinking plenty too. So now, speaking of which, how about a couple of sips? You know, let's forget about the sissy juice and have something a little more kick. And he pulls out a fifth of whiskey and takes a swig and offers it to Clark. And he says, nah, it's just not my bag. I don't want to, Scott, I really don't. Just not into that kind of stuff. And Scott's like, all right, have it your way, Boy Scout. Hero was thinking you were cool. And again, Pete Ross is like, Clark, are you trying to make us look bad or something? And Scott's like, so the guy doesn't want to party. It's no big deal. But it won't stop us, right, Pete? And he hands the fifth over to Pete. And he's not paying any attention. Scott's not paying any attention to the road. And he almost causes himself to get in an accident. But what happens is somebody else runs into a fire hydrant because Scott's not paying attention. He blows right through a stop sign. And Clark even says, geez, Scott, you just blew right through that stop sign. And Scott's like, turn around, like, what? I did? Nah, man, you're seeing things. You've been drinking. And Clark's like, look, Scott, I really think you need to let me drive, like pull over. And Scott's like, dude, relax. We'll be at your place in a second. We're almost there. Why can't you be, you know, more relaxed like Ross? He's so mellow. He's fallen asleep. Well, what he's done is he's passed out, you know, and Scott, again, not paying attention to the road, lighting a cigarette. And he says, you know, everyone in school except Ross knows that you two got the hots for each other. So do you know Ross has a crush on her too? Right. But you're the straight A super jock and you're in the way, man, you know, poor Pete. And Clark's like, forget about us, Scott, keep your eyes on the road, dude. And, he says, look out. And as Scott turns back around to face out the window, we see his face bathed in light. And, he's actually drifted over to the wrong side of the road. And this 18 wheeler truck hits his car and sends it careening off the road into a tree. The 18 wheeler itself goes sliding off the road, and, Clark obviously not harmed. Again, at this point, he doesn't know he has superpowers, but he's already starting to, you know, develop them. And so he's not hurt. He says, like, I'm alive. And he goes and he finds Lana. He's able to pull her out. She's okay. And Clark's like, oh my God, please let her be okay. And she is responding. She seems to be okay. And then he pulls Pete out. You know, Pete being asleep didn't even know what happened. And, you know, we see this all the time with people that fall asleep in a car accident. You know, they're asleep when the car accident happens, or they're passed out or whatever. Their body's so limp, they're often the ones that end up in kind of the best shape after these kind of accidents, because they don't tense up or what have you. So when Pete asks what happens, Clark says, we were stupid. That's what happened. And now we're gonna pay the price. And we see the truck driver run up. Saying, hey, what's wrong with these kids? You ran me off the road. I called for an ambulance on the CB. They ought to be here soon. And Clark says, thanks. It looks like we'll be needing them. And then we shift back to present time, and Clark saying, you know, unfortunately the paramedics couldn't help much. Scott was in tough shape. He was already in a coma, and you know, he's never woken up. And because I didn't prevent him from driving, and I didn't take the wheel like I should have, the accident was my fault. And his parents say, no, don't be ridiculous, Mr. Kent. You know, it's you, all you kids were guilty of bad judgment. But you know, you can't blame yourself for the accident any more than we can. You know, you'd been drinking yourself. And Mr. Brubaker says, yeah, maybe you felt sober, but that doesn't mean you were. And you know, you might've been the one that ended up in the hospital, like the others did. I bet your folks were pretty mad. And they must've been there to point out the error of your ways. So yeah, I mean, the other three all went to the hospital. But again, you know, Clark, even though he had fully manifested superpowers, you know, he was on his way, he was close. So that's why he was unharmed. And Clark's thinking back to that night when he did finally get home, and obviously Mom, Pa Kent were disappointed, and Pa Kent says as much, like, you can't begin to imagine how disappointed we are in you. You know, you're lucky you weren't killed. And Clark, you know, he's pretty upset. He's pretty despondent. I know. And Ma piling on, we thought we taught you better. We thought you knew right from wrong. How could you do this? And Clark's like, I just, you know, I wanted to, everybody else was drinking. I just wanted to fit in. And, you know, Scott offered to take us home, and I let him drive, even though I knew he was drunk. And Pa says, yeah, and I hope you learned your lesson. Alcohol and cars simply don't mix at all. Clark's like, yeah, but the weird thing is we got creamed, right? And I didn't even feel it. It's like that time I was trampled by a bull when I was a kid. Didn't get a scratch then either. I don't want to have a guardian angel or something. And obviously Mom and Pa can't, they know he came from a spaceship. They know, but they don't want to tell him. They want to continue to protect him. And so Pa says, and you know, it's just luck, but doesn't mean we want you taking chances. You know, it's not just your own safety you have to think about. You have to think about everybody else. And Ma kind of adds to that, saying, yeah, you have the responsibility to watch out for your fellow man. So, you know, instilling those values that that make him who he is, that make him Superman. And, you know, Pa agrees with her, saying, yeah, you might have thought you were sober, doesn't mean you were well enough to drive. And Clark's like, yeah, so I guess you don't think much of me anymore. And Ma says, ah, don't be silly. We still love you. We just want you to do the right thing. And we want you to grow up and be responsible and be the man that we know you can be. So back in the hospital room, present day, Clark's saying, you know, Strange, until tonight, I guess I never realized how profound an impact that accident had on my life. And when you think about it, it's true. Like all the things his parents are telling him that Mom, Pa, Ken are telling Clark they're once again actively instilling those ideals and that, you know, responsibility and the idea of looking out for others, you know, all those traits that make Superman who he is. So in a way, the story's, I mean, it's kids being kids, but at the same time, you want to think Superman was better than that, even as a teenager. But that's not realistic. So I think having, you know, writing the story, Dan Jurgens writing the story and talking about how Clark wasn't infallible and he did make mistakes, but how it shaped him to be the man that he is. So Clark goes on to say, it taught me there's only one way to live. You got to do the right thing. You know, the world fosters countless tragedies and all we can do is try to prevent them from happening. If we can prevent even one, that's worth it. And Mr. Brubaker says, is that why you're a reporter? And Clark says, yeah, well, journalism, it gives me the chance to fight injustice. Unfortunately, I can't cure them all, but you know, I do what I can. And Clark goes up to the side of the bed and he touches Scott's forehead and says, rest in peace, Scott. I hope you will forgive me for not being the man I should have been that night. And he thanks Scott's parents and they thank him. He said, you know, I think you are that kind of man now, Mr. Kent, who would have taken the keys that night. And even though I don't think you need forgiveness, I know Scott would have forgiven you a long time ago. And they thank him for coming. And he thanks them for their patience and says that he hopes they'll find relief once Scott is gone. So as he walks out of the hospital, he actually sees a couple of guys pass on a bottle back and forth on the sidewalk. And they're clearly, you know, three sheets to the wind. They're both slurring their words and they're talking about what a great party they just went to. And they're going to go hit up another party, the Garrison party. They bet it's still going strong. And as they're about to get in their car and drive away, one of the men turns and look at his tires. He's like, wait, what's going on here? My tires are melted down to nothing. It's freezing out here. How'd that happen? And we see Superman flying off in the snowstorm in the background. So then we get the credits right at the end here. I already mentioned Dan Jurgens is the one that wrote it. He also did the pencil art, Art Tabert on inks, Albert D. Guzman on lettering, and Glenn Whitmore on colors. So as I said, a very powerful story, very appropriate during the holiday season. Again, I know that the last episode was pretty preachy. This one is a little bit too. Just remind everybody, don't drink and drive, be responsible. There's plenty of Ubers out there that you can get a ride. I think they're on New Year's Eve. There's even, I don't know if it's Uber or Lyft or one of them does like discounted rates or free rides. Some, you know, local police stations offer designated drivers and such. So just be careful. We've all suffered so much this year already with everything that's been going on with the pandemic. So that's the last thing you want to end the year on or to start 2021 off on is a car accident or, you know, ending up in the hospital or getting a DUI and having, you know, massive fines and community service or jail time or all that. We just don't want it. So be safe out there. I think a lot of people, more people than usual, will be staying home to celebrate Christmas Eve and then, you know, drink to your heart's content. I'm all about enjoying yourself as long as you're not putting anybody in danger. So, interesting story. I'm surprised I like it so much because it is a little bit of a downer and a reminder to Superman that he's not infallible. And again, you know, this is before he was Superman, before he even knew he had powers. But those lessons that Ma and Pa Kent instilled in him, like he knew better. He knew that night and he was even saying to Scott, but he like, you know, like he himself said, he should have been more insistent. He should have stopped him. He shouldn't have given in to peer pressure and that sort of thing. So it's just a reminder. And again, I don't mean to be preachy, but I do like this story and I do think it's an important message. And I do want to remind everybody of our responsibility to our fellow man, to sort of protect everybody and keep everybody safe this holiday season. So I got another 4 Superman holiday stories that are coming up on the 12 days of the Comic Source Superman Sunday episodes today. So look out for those. These are the 2 that are a little more kind of down. There's one more that's kind of iffy. It's got a good message, but it's a little 90s angst. But then we have 3 that are really upbeat and fun. So don't worry, there's plenty of good ones to balance out, or upbeat ones to balance out the ones that are a little more serious of in nature, I suppose you'd say. So again, I want to wish everybody happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and be safe out there. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All 3 spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.